How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts as we are every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 94 and 794, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. We've got a lot of stuff to get into today. It's been a heavy iPay-per-view weekend. There's been a New Japan iPay-per-view, an ROH iPay-per-view, which, again, had a bunch of technical issues, which actually I want to talk about a little bit later on here in this program, and maybe it's not what you're expecting me to say. We're going to talk about Raw and SmackDown. Last Monday night on Raw, Daniel Bryan was having a match with Randy Orton, which he was scheduled to win, and he suffered a stinger, and the match was called off impromptu. Anyway, he was very upset about that, and they played it up in an angle on SmackDown on Friday night, and that is leading tomorrow to yet another Daniel Bryan Randy Orton match, which likely is going to be the match where Daniel Bryan is going to get his big win over Randy Orton and propel him into main events likely over the course of the summer. Now, how that plays into everything with WWE's latest head writer quitting is another matter entirely. And if you're wondering why a head writer would quit, well, when we talk about plans changing and shows being rewritten every Monday, I'm sure it can be very frustrating to spend your entire week writing a Raw show, and then on Monday afternoon, the show gets torn apart and completely rewritten. And one down, I'm sure many more to go. So we'll talk about that here on the program. Plus SmackDown from Friday night. We'll talk about Impact from Thursday, which went head-to-head with the NBA Finals, Game 7, if I recall correctly. Not a sports fan, but I believe that's what it went head-to-head against. Got smashed, as you'd expect. And also talk about Bellator ratings. Bellator did move to Wednesday nights. We talked about this on the show. The fact that it was switching nights, and not just switching nights, but moving away from Impact as its pro wrestling lead-in. And my prediction was the show was not going to do very well because there's definitely a tie-in between the Impact and Bellator audience. And taking that Impact audience away, it did in fact result in the Bellator rating being cut nearly in half. Is this permanent? Was it a one-week aberration? We're going to talk about that here on the show. Back in just a moment, everybody, with more. You are listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 94 and 794, XM Radio, Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. We got a lot of stuff to get into today. As noted in the opening segment, we had two iPay-per-views this weekend, and I was emailed by Big Dave Meltzer immediately after the New Japan iPay-per-view and told, you must watch this show of the year, maybe the best match of the year. And that, of course, leads us to the introduction today of Mike Sempervivi, who is going to tell me, getting a second opinion here, Dr. Sempervivi, do I need to see this New Japan iPay-per-view, Mike?
Yes, you do. This was not the show of the year to me. I still think the January 4th show was better. I think that I honestly think that was one of the best shows ever. This was not one of the best shows ever, but featured some matches that you could consider some of the best ever. Again, this is just another New Japan pay-per-view where we've got match of the year candidates, because the match between Hirooki Goto and Katsuyori Shibata was fantastic in the last iPay-per-view. They did a double knockout finish, which, you know, as I think we talked about a little bit on here, it's a very risky proposition when you do something like that because, you know, the fans are paying, this is what they're paying for, this is what they're paying to watch, they're paying to see a finish, so to do a double knockout is always kind of risky, but it paid off in spades for them because they came back this time around and had about a 14-minute match where it was slaps, chops, headbutts, you know, it was a fight, it was pro wrestling, but it was the type of pro wrestling where you're watching it and it just sucks you in, and by the end of it, you get that pure sports feeling out of it, and that's how good it was, where at the end they were going back and forth and hammering each other, and you didn't cringe over the shots they were taking. You were into it like you were watching a big fight. And that, I mean, it was arguably a five-star match, and again, there's been, you know, arguably a lot of them this year with Minoru Suzuki and Yuji Nagata. There's been a ton. Carl Anderson and Tanahashi, Okada and Tanahashi. There's been some really, really good ones. I think you can put this match from this pay-per-view absolutely into that equation. I don't know if it was the match of the year, but boy, it was damn close to it. And it was pretty much the prototype of what you'd want out of a grudge match with two guys who were, you know, rivals. They were college roommates and all that sort of stuff. To lead up to a pinnacle. They did a hell of a job, and it's just another New Japan pay-per-view that it costs you $25, and they really do give you more than your money's worth.
Now, the show's available on Ustream, if I recall correctly. Ustream/ NJPW 1972, I believe. It's off the top of my head, so just Google New Japan Ustream, and I'm sure it'll come up. But I believe, $25?
Yep, $25. Yeah, that's all cost. The Tokyo Dome, which is their WrestleMania in January, that was $35. But outside of that, it's $25. And when you compare that to boxing pay per views or WWE pay per views, as far as what you get out of it, I mean, last Sunday's pay per view Payback was really, really good. But if you take that dollar for dollar and you look at the $55 or $60 you spent with taxes and fees. For HD to watch that broadcast as opposed to $25 for this, you really get your money's worth far more out of this one.
Yes, the actual URL is ustream.tv-njpw for New Japan Pro Wrestling. And if you head up there right now and check it out, you'll be able to get the video on demand until June 30th at 1 o'clock a.m. Pacific. So you've got another full week to watch it online. And yeah, a lot of big matches on the show.
Again, I'll throw out there, too, just Minoru Suzuki and Shelton Benjamin against Shinsuke Nakamura and Tomohiro Ishii was incredibly good as well. And the main event between Okada and Togi Makabe, which there was another match, too, in the main event where you know Makabe wasn't going to beat Okada, but by the end of it, you get so involved in it, you kind of forget that for a second. And the crowd forgot it, too, which made this thing even better because they were in Osaka, Japan, and they weren't in Tokyo. So it was a little bit of a different building and a little bit of a different feel for the iPay-per-view, and they were fantastic.
Now, my big question, Mike, is the Rob Conway-Manabu Nakanishi match. I don't watch a lot of Japanese pro wrestling, but boy, when I heard that match, I was like, hold on a second. This match, how was it?
It was the weakest match on the show. With that said, it's not like it was offensive or anything like that. It was just by the law of averages that something had to be on the bottom. And this was it. It was a decent match. It was very short. It went about 8.5 minutes. It did include Bruce Tharp, the NWA president, who's been almost like a cartoonish character when it comes to him talking about Rob Conway and bringing him into Japan to face off against the New Japan guys. It did feature interference by him where it was one of those things where Prince Devitt has formed a heel group, the Irish junior heavyweight, who's been a phenomenal wrestler for quite some time. He's got a heel unit now. Of foreigners that are kind of wrecking shop in New Japan, and there are a lot of referees being jostled about, and a lot of outside interference, and a lot of interference right in front of officials, where to have Bruce Tharp actually get involved in that match with Rob Conway and Nakanishi, even though it does make some sense that you have the evil, you know, heel foreign NWA president, which is a tradition in Japan, too. They've had this before with guys when it comes to the National Wrestling Alliance. For him to get involved in there, it did kind of feel a little bit like overkill by the end of the night when it came to some of the run-ins, which is not a traditional thing when it comes to Japanese wrestling.
So run-ins in the Prince Devitt match?
Oh, a ton of them. That's
Dave
all was
right.
Yeah,
Carl
Anderson
were so upset at that possibility.
Well, the thing is, you know, with Carl Anderson, Tama Tonga, who's Haku's son, and this guy, Bad Luck Fale, it's kind of, you know, they're the protectors of Prince Devitt, and they do need to establish that Devitt's this kind of heel, and it's very slimy, and it's a very Western, you know, a WWE-type thing to do. And I think eventually it's going to be okay, because the booking of New Japan, you have to have faith in them, because most of the stuff they've touched has turned to gold. And you do need to set the context of what these guys are all about. So people are going to have to suffer through this a little bit. I guess the big question is, will it get to a point of oversaturation? And that is possible. It could happen, but we're really early in the game here. And I think people may want to take this a little bit too seriously when it comes to, Japanese wrestling and it not usually happening. It is 2013. And with the direction that New Japan's gone, taking on some of the feel of WWE and marketing that way and having, the personalities really shine up and down the card, I think you have to give them the benefit of the doubt.
So New Japan Dominion, available ustream.tv/NJPW. Get the video on demand through June 30th, and I'll be watching that show likely later on today, and probably watching the ROH pay-per-view as well. Believe it or not, you'll be shocked.
It lets you.
They had issues with the feed. I want to mention one thing here very quickly. I'm not really much of a tech guy, but I do know a little bit about it based on our own website, and maybe I'm just like completely out to lunch with this right here. But I have often heard people say it's so frustrating that ROH has these iPay-per-view issues because there are so many smaller groups that seem to run their iPay-per-views and they have no issues whatsoever. And to me, it's kind of like, well, hold on a second. Based on what I know about our own website and WrestleMania traffic and such, I mean, would it not make sense that if you're a smaller group and you've got maybe, let's say, 75 people that are buying your iPay-per-view, then yeah, it's probably going to go off without a hitch because only 75 people are trying to access it at the same time. But if you've got an ROH iPay-per-view where you've got 20 times that number of people or 25 or 30 times the number of people that are trying to get on to get your iPay-per-view at the same time, yeah, maybe there will be issues. I don't know if you guys remember this, but WWE just happens to be the biggest wrestling promotion in the entire world. And guess what? They had major streaming issues. In fact, so major that it never even streamed at all for WrestleMania, likely because there were 10,000 times the number of people that tried to access WrestleMania all at the same time, as opposed to accessing a small pay-per-view that maybe a limited number of people are watching. So I'm not even saying I'm defending ROH, but I think there's more to this than just they don't know what they're doing. Back in a moment, Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. We are here talking the ROH pay-per-view and the issues. As I noted before the break, I think that criticism of ROH because they can't run an iPay-per-view as opposed to small independent companies that seem to pull off their iPay-per-views without a hitch is missing the point that probably significantly more people are trying to access the ROH iPay-per-view than a smaller promotion iPay-per-view, and perhaps that's the reason there are the issues. Now, I'm not defending ROH in the sense that this is a company that is owned by Sinclair Broadcasting. They should be able to put the money into it to ensure that their iPay-per-view streams go off without a hitch. But whenever you're dealing with thousands and thousands of people trying to access a certain page or a certain feed all at the same time, the more people that are trying to access it at the same time, the more likely it is that you're going to have streaming issues. And the New Japan iPay-per-view, for example, I mean, the very first one, I mean, yeah, the thing went off absolutely completely without a hitch. But guess what? There were like 600 people outside of Japan. 600 people outside of Japan that attempted to buy this pay-per-view. Okay, that's maybe one-third of the number of people that are going to buy like a well-promoted ROH iPay-per-view. So I don't know if that's the issue, but to point out that a very small company can run an iPay-per-view without a hitch, and therefore ROH is incompetent because they're unable to do the same thing, it's not the same thing. It's completely different here.
You're absolutely right. I think where the issue comes in with Ring of Honor is the fact that it just seems to be every single one. And, you know, we've heard of issues, especially when it came to Evolve. I think it was Evolve and Dragon Gate where they've had issues, and especially Evolve, in fact, this, only a couple weeks ago, where they blamed it on the building. Well, Ring of Honor was running the Duke Burns Arena. They've run that building a lot. That's number one, so you can't really blame it on the building. This keeps happening over and over again, every single show, so there's obviously an issue there. The fact they are owned by a television holdings group, again, that's the problem. And again, I do actually have a lot of sympathy because, I mean, look at what you're basing it off of, cables and wires in the building, and whether the people at the building actually, you know, told you the truth as far as did they give you a dedicated line and all that sort of stuff. And there's a lot of moving parts, and I do feel bad. I mean, live television is a pain. Live anything can be a pain when things go wrong. The problem is with Ring of Honor, it always seems to go wrong. And that's, again, that's the biggest problem. So I think people should have some level of sympathy for them. That's absolutely the truth. And they should accept these things are going to happen because, again, there's a lot of moving parts. But with that said, it's got to stop happening with Ring of Honor. I mean, it's, you know, they can issue all the refunds that they want. They can offer to play the show again and all that stuff. But not only did the feed go out at you know, during the main event when it was, you know, hot Briscoe on Briscoe, Delaware, Sussex County action, there were buffering issues throughout the show. So at some point, something's going to have to give there because, again, you lose more and more faith, you know, plunking down $25 and devoting the time to watching a show where you're not even sure if you're going to be able to see it.
It's a problem. It's a problem. But actually, this kind of I should bring this up. This is a very strange segue, but I'm going to bring it up anyway. We're now a little ways away from the Marlos Kunin Chris Cyborg Invicta fight, and Invicta has run on Ustream, and they have had problems on Ustream in the past. And the claim, at least from Ustream, is that, well, there was an exceptionally large number of people who tried to access this Invicta show. And on the surface, it's like, hold on a second. Like, is there really this kind of demand for Invicta? But that's what they claimed, and the feed did have problems, and that was from Ustream and not from Invicta. So maybe there is, like, a ridiculous demand for women's fighting for free on the internet, or actually whatever the cost was supposed to be. They ended up letting everybody just watch it for free. But Invicta now is taking the step of going from internet pay-per-view to traditional pay-per-view. And with ROH, for example, I mean, let's say they're doing 1,800 or 1,600 viewers on iPay-per-view. And iPay-per-view is continually having issues. And so you've got a problem now. It's actually the too big to be small, too small to be big issue of you have enough people that with your current setup, it's going to be difficult to not have streaming issues, but you don't have enough people. You can't take 2,000 people or even 3,000 viewers and make any money on traditional pay-per-view. I mean, you're going to lose your ass if you try to do traditional pay-per-view. So ROH can't just run on normal pay-per-view. They would lose tons of money. So the question is, Invicta moving to traditional pay-per-view for a Chris Cyborg, Marlos Kunin fight, to me, this sounds like not the best idea, but maybe I'm wrong. What are your thoughts on trying to run this match on regular pay-per-view, Mike?
Well, I guess if you're going to do one, this is the only one you can really do name-wise. You know, Cyborg, I guess you can always say, hey, you can put her on pay-per-view and it's a name, but, you know, Marlos Conan is one of the only people there. They've already fought before anyway, but she's one of the only people with any name appeal at all that you could go ahead and pull off, you know, trying to even do a pay-per-view. And I get what they're trying to do. I mean, I do understand it. With that said, I don't think it's all that great of an idea, and I have a feeling it's going to be one of those things where there's probably going to be as many iPay-per-view orders as there are regular pay-per-view orders. I honestly believe that. I think people underrate how many people have internet TV and how many people have monitors the size of small TVs or have their computers hooked up to TVs where they're just fine with ordering, you know, right from the company. The UFC's numbers aren't great, but they're, you know, they're there. And Invicta, there's not enough time to promote this show to get people heavily into it where it's like, you know, how many people is this show really going to do? You know, it's just, I don't know if they're getting a stipend from somebody. I don't know if they're getting somewhat of funding or something like that. Like, Yeah, I could see the UFC, as bizarre as this sounds, because of the fact that they don't, you know, they're at some point going to cycle out of the women's division, the people that they have in there, and they're going to start getting people from Invicta since they have a quiet handshake deal anyway. I could see the UFC wanting to put some money in there to maybe showcase somebody or take a look at people and put them on a pay-per-view where they may be in the UFC 2 or 3 months down the line or a couple of fights down the line. I don't think that's all a bad idea. If they do something like that, I think it could be mutually beneficial to both sides. With that said, I don't think they're doing it for this one, and we're rolling up on it within, 2 weeks? It's not all that, you know, far away, 2 or 3 weeks away, and then they finally nail out down this deal. Maybe they're working with an Integrated Sports, who's a pay-per-view. They work with promoters to get their pay-per-views out there and share some of the costs of it and obviously reap some of the benefits. I don't know exactly how this one's working, but on the surface alone, you figure it's not that great of an idea because I'm not sure what they were getting for their iPay-per-views. You know, the quality was there after they had issues with the first one. And obviously it's a good fighting organization. But with that said, they didn't have time to drum anything up, so I'm not sure how many people are even going to buy it.
Now, going back to the ROH iPay-per-view, since you, I believe you saw the whole show, is that correct, or most of it?
No, actually, I didn't get a chance to see the ROH iPay-per-view. I watched a little of Nick Diaz's group instead while I was bouncing around with different things last night.
That's another one. I heard that the stream for that went off without a hitch.
That looked great. That looked great. Now, it was a bunch of amateur fights and, you know, a bunch of guys in their, you know, first, second, third, fourth fight sort of deal. I only had a chance to see a little bit of it. I thought the most amazing part, though, was the announcing crew and the fact that the Diaz brothers hired themselves a color analyst that they may be able to relate to just slightly.
And that they may relate to?
Well, a little bit. What exactly was Josh Rosenthal busted for? Was it marijuana?
Weed, I believe, yes.
Well, there you go, because Josh Rosenthal joined TJ DeSantis and Javier Vasquez as the third man in the booth, providing color for last night's War MMA show.
That's amazing. Now, what did War stream, was it Ustream, or what did it stream through?
I think it was called Lifestream.
Lifestream?
You know, again, and it's, you know, obviously, who knows how many people were actually watching it, but the parts I saw were very crisp, very clear, no jumping, and came off without a hitch. With that said, you know, who knows if the building was specifically set up for it or anything like that. So I guess you kind of have to take that with a little bit of a grain of salt because it's like Ustream. We talk about New Japan. They've had great success with it. Dragon Gate just had a taped iPay-per-view that they put on there. That was good. And everything, for the most part, I've ever seen on there has been good. But as you noted, Invicta had a problem the first time around. So these things are going to pop up anywhere.
I just wonder, like, how many people actually watch the Nick Diaz War iPay-per-view.
I have no idea.
Could it be
a
lot?
I honestly don't. We put it up on the front page because they offered it for free, and they said, hey, you know, put it up there. We put it up on our front page, so I'm assuming it's
actually, hold on. Let me go find out how many people clicked on it.
Okay. Because while you do that, I mean, like SureDog and I'm sure MMA Junkie, and there's a bunch of other groups out there that said, hey, we'll put it up on the page, and if people click on it, cool. In the same sort of way. So in a way, it was actually, you know, pretty good guerrilla marketing for what it was because, again, it wasn't trying to be anything, you know, other than it was, which was, you know, a bunch of dudes fighting.
451 people clicked on it.
So well, there you go.
Not sure how many people actually watched it, but on our front page, 451. So there you go.
And it was a long show with a lot of fights on it. I'm not sure how long that one was that you went to in Seattle, the Strikeforce show with all the amateur fights.
Oh, 16 years. It was 16 years long.
In and out.
It's 16 years long.
Wow.
That's the longest show ever.
Good Lord.
Yeah. So there you go, everybody. That's some talk on the streaming issues of these various iPay-per-views. And when we come back from the break, we're going to talk about WWE and TNA, Raw and SmackDown, and Impact as well. And this coming Monday night, there's a Daniel Bryan-Randy Orton match, which may be the big win that propels Daniel Bryan into main events this summer. So that's coming up after the break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here every Sunday at 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 92, 94, 794, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. Tune in radio app on your smartphone, as well as the Sirius Satellite Radio app, also on your smartphone. And for the latest news and info in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, you can always head to WrestlingObserver.com, our website. Daily news updates. We have daily radio shows. Mike himself did three radio shows back-to-back last night. It's a crazy man, as well as Dave Meltzer. We'll be up either later on tonight or tomorrow, Dave and I, and talking all the news in wrestling. I believe we're going to be having Shannon Knapp of Invicta up in the next couple of days. And we have shows all the time. And for $10.99 a month, you can get a subscription where you get every single solitary show that we do. That's about 12 to 15 radio shows a week, depending on the week. And in addition to that, you have full access to our archives. Every single show that we have ever done dating back to 2005. We're closing in on 10 years of audio in the archives, which is a terrifying thought. That's all available in the archives right now as part of your subscription. $10.99. Sign up. Give it a shot. If you don't like it, you don't have to ever sign up again. But if you like this show, Wrestling Observer Live, I guarantee you will love your subscription to WrestlingObserver.com because you will have more audio than you'll even know what to do with. So try it out. If you head to WrestlingObserver.com and scroll down the right-hand side of the page, there is a listing of our latest three free radio shows. Free! You can download them, check them out, and, well, I kind of already know what you're going to get because it's this show, but we have free samples up there to check out. And if you like it, support the site, WrestlingObserver.com. And back to the news here. Mike, last week on Raw, Daniel Bryan suffered a stinger, really badly wanting to continue the match. They wouldn't let him. They stopped the match. He was very upset. Had an argument backstage with Triple H that WWE.com wrote about. May or may not have been legitimate. Some people believe they were trying to work the boys. Other people believe that Daniel Bryan just flipped his lid and was very passionate, and Triple H as well, to water under the bridge one way or the other. So at the end of the day, I don't think it really matters. But this coming Monday on Raw, they're doing the rematch. And first question, Mike, should they have stopped the match?
Yes.
All right.
Yeah, I honestly think that. I mean, when it comes to stingers anymore, or really anything like that, why? You know, in football, you're going to walk off in anything. I mean, it's one of those. Look, you worked. You know, it's dangerous enough out there. You're putting your life in somebody else's hands. I mean, stingers are, you know, I've gotten them playing football, and they're kind of scary because you feel like you're paralyzed for a minute, and it's, you know, you don't feel quite right for a little while after that. And look at the moves, you know, that you have to do when it comes to professional wrestling. Why risk it? You know, those head injuries, stuff like that. I mean, it's okay. And to me, it added to the drama of the things because it's something real that happened. And not only that, now you have something to play off of, which makes Daniel Bryan, if he wanted to, be far more sympathetic because he comes back and gets the win this week, or say he's going dirty out of this and he's tired of people conspiring against him and holding him down. So, again, you're able to use something that was real and build it into a story, which isn't that what wrestling is all about anyway?
I am sympathetic to Daniel Bryan in the sense that he's very passionate about what he does. And obviously, as he noted, he'd never had a match stopped due to injury before in his life. But at the end of the day, I mean, it's 2013 now, you know, and there are guys that Daniel Bryan worked with in ROH. I mean, Nigel McGuinness, for one, is done, you know, from continuing matches after he was hurt. And a lot of guys, you know, there are guys that never even made it to WWE. And I'm sure that Daniel Bryan, I'm not saying that he's lucky that he made it to WWE, but based on how hard he worked in ROH, I mean, it could have been a situation like Nigel McGuinness where they ran him through the test and they were like, dude, we can't sign you. This is messed up. This is messed up. This can't be fixed with surgery. I mean, you just can't do it. And it's just a new world, you know. It's not the end of the world that match got stopped. It played into the storyline anyway on Friday. You know, they played that into the thing, and he tried to beat Randy Orton again and only got a count out and was very upset. And now it's like it has become maybe a better storyline because now he's trying harder and harder to get that win. You build it up, and when the win finally comes, it's like when the Shield had their streak broken. The place went absolutely crazy. So I just think that, you know, it's one thing if it's an injury that's like not a big injury. You know, I don't know what not a big injury would be, but a stinger where you feel like you're paralyzed on one side of your body and one of your arms doesn't work. I mean, let's err on the side of safety in a situation like this, because it could have been much worse than a stinger. You know, it could have been a broken neck. It could have been anything. So it's best to me to be safe here in 2013.
Yeah. Now, whether everybody takes that advice or not, or if they continue to do it, I guess that's to be determined, but I have a feeling they'll continue to do it because, again, there's really just no reason not to, liability-wise or for really any other reason.
The match this coming Monday, maybe the kickoff. Obviously, they're doing Mark Henry and John Cena for the title at the Money in the Bank pay-per-view, which I'm very excited about. Daniel Bryan may end up in Money in the Bank, may win the briefcase, may offer to cash it in against John Cena at SummerSlam. I can actually... You can't always have the guy cashing in win the title. And they've already set the... there's been one man who tried to cash it in and failed. And that man is John Cena. So I can see a situation where, as a make good, so to speak, John Cena ends up stopping someone else from successfully cashing in Money in the Bank. And that person would be Daniel Bryan. And I don't know. I guess we'd see where that went with Daniel Bryan if it led to him snapping and turning heel or whatever. But I don't know if he's going to end up with the title. I think a John Cena, Daniel Bryan match with Undertaker and Kane versus The Shield and Brock Lesnar and CM Punk as a top three match at SummerSlam sort of deal. That's a big card. I think that'd be a big card for hardcore fans and for casual fans. And where they go, I guess we'll see. But how would you book this Daniel Bryan summer push?
You know, I don't know. I don't know if I'd have him win Money in the Bank. I know, I guess it would make sense to lead to that and have him win it and have the chance. But I guess it depends on if people take to Mark Henry. That would be, I think, the thing, because I think if Henry continues on with any semblance of the motion that he had on Monday, and I love Mark Henry, you love Mark Henry, most of the people that are on our site, I think they love Mark Henry too. It will stay up, and will people want to see him and John Cena for 2 months, for 3 months? I don't know, but if they take to it after this one, I say you keep going with it and use Daniel Bryan on the peripheral of maybe, you know, possibly facing off against John Cena, but if not, hold him off and just have him with somebody else. And obviously make him a focal part of Raw because he gets the reactions that he does. But I'm not too quick. I mean, again, it would have been one thing because, you know, remember when the Big Show fought Hardcore Holly? I think it was at WrestleMania, or it was Brock Lesnar and Bob Holly, and it was almost like a place filler of a show or of a match to kind of get them to other things. And I think that's the intention here with Mark Henry and John Cena, but I don't think anybody expected Monday to go off as well as it did. So if you can keep that up with Mark Henry, why not continue on with that and then use Daniel Bryan in one of a number of other roles against one of a number of other guys?
Certainly possible. SmackDown on Friday, they went off the air, actually, with Daniel Bryan and Randy Orton staring each other down. And I enjoyed SmackDown. I don't know if you've seen the show yet, but anytime you got a Daniel Bryan main event on SmackDown, the fans are so into him, and he's caught on. I made this comparison a couple of weeks ago, and a couple of other people were like, that's exactly what I thought. That day that Eddie Guerrero came through the crowd and the place just decided, okay, we love Eddie Guerrero. He's a big star. I feel that Daniel Bryan has got to that point. And I don't know if, I mean, I don't think there's any chance that he's going to be the next John Cena or anything like that. I don't see them pushing him in that role, but I can see him being a long-term main eventer. And hopefully after the summer that's where they see him, because he has the talent.
Yeah, and they absolutely need him to be. I mean, I think more than anything, that's what they need him to be. You know, Randy Orton's always got a, you know, a foot towing on the edge. John Cena, obviously, is where you need him to be. Brock Lesnar's where you need him to be, but, you know, he's not a regular guy. CM Punk's about where you need him to be. And Sheamus is, when you have him, you know, into something, he's the other guy you got. Everybody else, Alberto Del Rio, Dolph Ziggler, Jack Swagger, everybody else they have isn't at that level, and they need a guy up there. And when you have a guy like Daniel Bryan, to me, you have to take care of a guy like that, because no matter what, sure, he doesn't have to win the world title, but he's a guy you need up there to stay credible and strong and to keep people serious in him, which obviously they're probably going to do anyway, but position him in a way, because whether he's a good guy, whether he's a bad guy, whether he's facing a huge guy like Kane, whether he's facing an inexperienced guy like Roman Reigns or whoever it is, he can work with them. And that's what they need, is, you know, to make other guys look good, because they may have fallen ass backwards into it, and you may not like how they treat, you know, a majority of their roster right now. But when you look at Monday night and you look at The Shield and Damian Sandow and CM Punk and, you know, Daniel Bryan and the other guys who are succeeding in WWE and some of the guys they have in the pipeline, they're in a pretty good spot. You know, obviously, the creatively, things probably need to get better, and there's always a lot of flux there, so I'm not sure if they will or not. And there's some things that need to be explained when it comes to storylines, but at least there's a base of talent there that's ready to take them kind of to the next level. And to me, you need Daniel Bryan to help him to do that.
Do you think this is kind of plays an impact? Do you believe that the Bellator getting smashed in the ratings, literally almost doing half of what they were doing on Thursdays when moving to Wednesdays, do you think that's a permanent deal? Do you think people just need to figure out the correct day? Or do you think that Wednesday nights with no Impact lead-in is doom for Bellator?
I think Wednesday nights with no Impact lead-in is going to be doomed for a while. I mean, if they...
This is without UFC competition, by the way, which is coming soon.
Well, the thing is, July 31st, they have that. I mean, that's probably their big... That's their biggest show in quite some time. You got both King Mo and Ben Askren on there, and you have no cross-promotion going for two guys who can pretty much talk their asses off and just stand there and get reactions out of people, whether good or bad. And I think that's going to be the show that determines it. I don't know. To me, you put them together, whether it's on Wednesday or Thursday, I understand that they're going to get killed by football and they want to hide from that. But, you know, fine, put them both on Wednesday. But to me, make them a tandem package. I think they need each other. They play off of each other. And frankly, with what comes on Spike, I don't understand why you don't run those shows. And then, like they do with all of their other programming that's original, rerun the hell out of it throughout the week. Obviously, you want to make it special and get the advertisers and the eyeballs on it that night specifically, but I think you could put it on a couple other times as well, too, if you think people are going to miss out on it. I just think they're two things that absolutely need each other.
Impact this week, Brooke Hogan. Did you watch this segment?
I have not yet. I want to, though, after hearing about it.
There was a segment on this show that, oh my God. I'm sure Brooke Hogan is a nice girl. As I mentioned on another show, I thought she was the most level-headed, nice person on the Hogan Knows Best series.
Great tan.
Seems sweet enough. But my God, as a television character, especially on live TV, I mean, I think she knew what a disaster it was. Everybody else obviously knew what a disaster it was. It was just... It was... pure legit train wreck TV, and unfortunately, I haven't checked the quarter hour rating. But man, I was ready to switch to the NBA during that segment, and I do not like basketball, so that should tell you something right there. We're gonna head to a break. When we come back, we're going to wrap it up here on the show. You are listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. Last Tuesday, had a special show. I think it was Tuesday. Sweet Soraya Knight was on the show. It is the mother of WWE's Paige. And cheap plug, listen to that show, everybody. It was absolutely awesome. But anyway, her daughter, Paige, is the new NXT Women's Champion. And traditionally in NXT, I don't even know why they do this, when a person wins the title, they usually end up on Raw sooner rather than later, and then they have to come back and drop the title. Biggie Langston was the last one. I'm not sure if Bo Dallas is necessarily being fast-tracked to the main roster. I'm sure the NXT fans would hope he would be, so he'd get out of NXT. But Paige, I think, is ready for WWE. I think she's been ready for a while. Very unique look. Lovely young lass and a good worker. Any thoughts on Paige, Mike?
I see. I've only seen a little bit of her, so what I've seen has actually been good. I know, you know, I've seen more matches of her mother, which is, you know, she's awesome. So everybody, again, people have been excited about her down there for quite some time. Summer Rae obviously had the, you know, the bombshell type of blonde, shiny looks that WWE likes, but, you know, for a while now, people have been saying, you know, Paige is the one that you're going to bring up to the main roster, and because she looks a little bit different, it's kind of like that AJ thing, she's going to have a natural built-in following as it is, and apparently her work's pretty good.
So if you get a chance, everybody, it's on Hulu Plus, the NXT show. And by the way, tomorrow, I don't know for sure, but 2 weeks ago, I was told that the Wyatt family was debuting in 2 weeks. I guess that would be tomorrow. I know they're on the road this weekend, so a very good chance that they're no longer coming. They're here tomorrow night.
Run.
So you better run, everybody. Not too far. They need the ratings, but run. All right, everybody, we are wrapping it up here. We've got three-part Observer Radio up on the front page of WrestlingObserver.com right now, and we're going to be back tomorrow night after Raw as well, talking that show as we head into the Money in the Bank pay-per-view. And, of course, I want to thank Mike, as always, all the people at Sports Byline USA, everybody for listening. It's been fun. We'll be back next week, Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network.